Conference record has joined the conference.
Devin?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me?
I can. Sounds good. Right. This is Dave with the Grateful Web, and today I have the extreme pleasure of talking to Devin Allman, of Devin Allman's Honey Tribe fame, more recently a part of the supergroup Grow Southern Brotherhood. How you doing today, Devin?
Man, doing fantastic. How about yourself?
I'm doing great, man. It's sun's shining in Colorado. We're getting over a little bit of snow from a few days ago, and yeah, I can't complain at all on this end. Where are you now?
Man, I am enjoying a couple weeks off at home in St. Louis, Missouri.
Good for you.
And it's cold as hell. It's 10 degrees out right now, but
I saw your posting from this morning.
Yeah, I mean, I'm home with family, you know, and working on some cool things and gearing up for Turquoise to come out. So it's a good time.
Excellent. Well, let's start off. Let's talk about the new record. You've made your mark over the years with Honey Tribe, and more recently as a part of the supergroup, the Royal Southern Brotherhood, whose album came out in May of 2012. And now here we are at the long-awaited solo album, Turquoise, which is due out the 12th of this month. These new songs, it's really amazing. I've gotten a chance to preview it a bit, an amazing group of songs. They really seem to have a personal tone to them, and almost in a sense, a longing for a break from the life on the road. And I was just wondering if you could tell us kind of a little about how you decided, you know, it was time to do the solo record.
Well, I had kind of always wanted to do a solo thing. I think when, I've had Honey Tribe together for 12, 13 years. So when I would think about making a record with Honey Tribe, even though they were my tunes and, you know, I was the quarterback and the producer of the records, you know, I still had to work within a framework of what Honey Tribe was supposed to be, you know? So with doing a solo record, there's no framework. There's no rules. There's no, oh, you need to stay in this genre or you need to play this type of song or that type of song. It was wide open. And when I had written a couple songs for the Royal Southern Brotherhood record, you know, I noticed that they were more laid back. You know, there wasn't any aggressive tendency there. They were just songs. And so that's what I wanted for the solo record. I was like, you know, what I gave to Royal Southern Brotherhood is what I want to magnify and make as my solo record. And so that's really what I did, you know, and there's, you know, like you're saying that, you know, it sounds like there's a bit of, you know, a personal thing. I mean, I think records should be personal to a certain extent,
sure.
You know, not to where they're just self-engrossing.
Right. Yeah.
You know, people still need to be able to relate to them. But, you know, it's funny how I look back at the record now. You know, I recorded Turquoise 6 months ago.
Sure.
You know, and it's funny how a theme in the record seems to be home. You know, in the beginning of the record, I'm young and I want to prove myself. I'm ready to leave home.
And you're leaving
by the
home,
middle
yeah.
of the record, I'm by the middle of the record, I'm ready to frickin' come home.
Yeah. Definitely concept-y in that sense of it, you know, kind of follows that sort
well,
of circle.
There's a theme there for sure, you know, and it's found itself in there. And I think when you really just give yourself to this life, that's just going to be part of it, you know. That's just part of it.
Do you feel that, you know, I mean, kind of working with the supergroup, with Royal Southern Brotherhood, it's kind of almost at the opposite end of the spectrum as a more personal solo album. Do you feel that working with those guys, you know, recently has kind of, you know, I mean, I think you kind of answered this in a way, but has, you know, made you want to create something more personal?
You know, I don't,
so,
you know, I didn't really... Huh?
No, go ahead.
No, I didn't really, you know, walk away from the first year of Royal going, man, I want to do something personal. It just really happened organically. These were the songs and, you know, the lyrics and stuff that have been bouncing around in my head and bouncing around my iPad for the last year. So that just kind of came, you know, real organically, you know. I think there's some personal stuff, you know, throughout my stuff with Honey Tribe as well. I think it might just be me as an artist.
Right. Can you tell us a little bit about the players on the solo record?
Yeah, man. Gianrico Scott. You know, Gianrico Scott, obviously the drummer for Derek Trucks for 15 years and the drummer in Royal Southern Brotherhood was on board to play drums on it. He's become one of my best friends. I love the man dearly. And he can just do anything, you know, and play anything. And, you know, you show him the tune, you sit down with an acoustic, you take him out on the porch, you show him the tune, and you go back in and two or three takes, it's done.
Wow.
And there's nothing better than that. And I mean, not only is it done like you've gotten through the tune, but it's done and it's the level of mastery is there. That's how good he is. He's truly incredible. Miles Weeks is a really tasty bass player that plays with the Eric Lindell band, and they're out there on the same circuit as me. I saw those cats one night, and I was like, dude, that guy plays upright, and he's just got this really killer touch. And so I just hit him up. I was like, hey, man, you know, I'm going to make a solo record in a few months, and I want you on it. And he agreed. He was cool. Luther Dickinson kind of goes without saying, you know, he's a monster.
Sure.
And he's a friend, and he came in and threw down on the first cut, and it was just awesome. Had a bunch of laughs. And, you know, he was kind of breezed in and breezed right out. Samantha came in and did the duet with me, and she's a monster talent. She's definitely,
she's
you know.
Wonderful.
Oh, man, right? She's like, you know,
where. Oh, man, in addition to just the album in general, I mean, that was a nice kick with that one, man. Very good.
She's like, yeah, you know, I really, well, first of all, we have the same label and shit, you know, so we just hit it off as buddies. And we like all the same music. But, like, when they were calling Susan Tedeschi the next Bonnie Raitt, I think Sam's the next Susan Tedeschi.
Right.
And then eventually the next Bonnie Raitt, you know. And she's just outstanding. So to have her on the record is really great. Ron Holloway, who's played with Dizzy Gillespie and Warren Haynes, and, you know, an amazing sax player.
Yeah.
He came in and blew sax on a tune. And then I can't forget, on half the record, the real tasty B3 that you hear is provided by Rick Steff of the amazing Memphis band Lucero.
Oh, yeah, Lucero's great. I actually got
Lucero,
to catch them out here last year. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I love Lucero. Like, I'm like their biggest fan. You know, they play in Memphis, they'll play acoustic, and I'm like in the first row, like, you know, probably bugging the shit out of Ben Nichols because I love that band so much.
Right. I hear you. That's about where I position myself at. No, they're absolutely wonderful. Could you talk a little bit about the dynamic, you know, the kind of recording dynamic, you know, in the studio with, you know, the Royal Southern Brotherhood, where you've got, you know, a bunch of really, you know, established, you know, kind of veteran, you know, guys along the same caliber as yourself, and just how that dynamic is in terms of being in the studio compared to, you know, the group of guys that you had together on the solo album, and just kind of the similarities and differences between recording with the two different sets.
I mean, it was similar in that they both records went by really fast. And both records were produced by Grammy-winning Jim Gaines. You know, Jim Gaines has become like a mentor and an uncle to me. After working with him on the Royal record, I begged him, you know, to do the solo record. I was like, man, I know you want a break, and I know you want to chill out at home in beautiful Southern Tennessee and just do nothing, but, man, please do this record. And
one more.
Just one more, buddy, come on. And he was great. So that was the similarity. Both done really quick. Both done with Jim Gaines. I would say the difference is that obviously on a solo record, I'm really going to be in charge of, you know, the tempo of the songs and, you know, and Jim Gaines as well. You know, how they feel, how they're flowing, you know, what speed we give them and how we end them. And, you know, a lot, there's more scrutiny, you know, for me to kind of take over and say, hey, you know, this is what I see here and this is what I hear. You know, with Royal, it was a lot more of, you know, Jim Gaines, but with me and Mike, you know, kind of going back and forth, because Mike would bring in tunes, and then Mike and Cyril would write a tune, and then me and Cyril would write a tune, and then Charlie brought in a tune, and, you know, so that was much more of a pass it around group effort. And luckily, everybody within that band trusts the other cats. So if I'm walking in on session and Zito and Gianrico are laying down a tune, you know, my ego isn't going, well, why are they doing that in there by themselves without me? You know, it's not like that. It's like, oh, kick ass, man, they're jamming, and this is going to be great.
So you didn't see much of the kind of too many cooks in the kitchen sort of syndrome that, you know, can potentially come out of, you know, a session.
Well, that's, you know, when I got the phone call to put that band together, I said, you're nuts.
Right.
I said, it sounds all great, but that's like putting five quarterbacks on a field and saying, okay, guys, go play football.
Like in a perfect world, but, yeah.
Right, it's going to be stupid. Who's going to catch the ball? Who's going to kick it? So, I really did. I mean, I remember telling my manager straight up, like, that's the most awesomely horrible idea I've ever heard. Anyway, obviously, I just kind of kept, you know, I'd be watching the tube, and I'd be thinking, Allman and a Neville in the same band. Allman and a Neville in the same band. Like, how cool is that?
Uh-huh.
And that's what made me try it. And I said, look, let's just try it. Let's see if we can write tunes. If we can write tunes, let's go get in a room and jam. If we can jam, let's book a supergroup gig and have fun with it. And,
yeah.
You know, maybe 10 people are going to show up, but let's go do it and see what it feels like on stage. Well, it sold out.
Yeah.
You know, like we didn't have a record deal or nothing. And it was like, all right, well, shit, let's go make a record.
Now.
This is working, you know, so it was one of those things where even though it was an idea of what it would be like for an Allman and a Neville to work together, it still had to be magical and really, really work, or it's just bullshit.
Sure.
You know, it has to be special, you know, I mean, I had already pounded 12 years out of my career really hard worldwide. I mean, I'm not going to just walk away from that without it being really special.
Absolutely.
So
with the just going and touching a little bit more on recording in general, with the mm-hmm. the Honey Tribe records, they were recorded at the Arden Studios in Memphis, and
correct.
There's a lot more money
back then, you see.
What's that?
There's a lot more money back then, you see. That's when you're getting $30,000 to make a record. No, go ahead. I was just trying to be a smart ass, because, man.
Oh, no, by all means, I completely appreciate it. But the RSB record you guys recorded in Louisiana at Dockside.
Right.
And then for Turquoise, you returned to Arden. Is that correct?
Well, actually, I did Turquoise. I did all of the basic tracks at Bessie Blues Studios in southern Tennessee, which is Jim Gaines' home.
Okay.
It's essentially Jim Gaines' home. But now I took the basics and I went over to Arden, and this is probably where the info might be getting mixed up. I recorded all my guests at Arden. I recorded Luther, Samantha, Ron Holloway, Rick Steff from Lucero. That was just an easier place for everybody to convene, was in Memphis.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the clarification on that. Amazing.
Yeah, no problem.
What you can read on the old internet these days.
Exactly.
But in regards to Arden, I had read something in the past that Arden was kind of a special place in your past, stemming from an experience. I believe it was when you were a teenager and the Allman Brothers were recording there. I was wondering if you could kind of talk to us about that. And
absolutely. I left home really young and I bounced around. I lived in New York, I lived in Nashville, and then I landed in Memphis. My manager at the time was saying that Memphis had a great rock scene. So I moved there and I get a call from my old man, and I'm 17 years old. And he goes, well, hey man, I'm making a record in Memphis with Tom Dowd at Arden Studios. You know, it'll be great, son. I'll be able to see you almost every day for a couple months. I was like, awesome. I was like, so, you know, you don't mind if I come down there and just hang out? And he's like, no, man, come on down. So I made it a point to be down there every single day. I was there for every day of every session. And I just wanted to soak it in.
What record was that?
It was Shades of Two Worlds.
Okay.
Which I think was the one that had, what, Nobody Left to Run With?
I don't know. No, man, that was Where It All Began.
So it was End of the Line, wasn't it?
I think you're right, yeah.
That was the single, End of the Line?
Right.
Something like that. Well, anyway, I was in there every day. I wanted to watch Tom Dowd at work. Because even though I was a punk-ass 17-year-old, I knew how incredible Batman was. So I got to see that man at work every day for 50 or 60 days. It was incredible. You know, I got to see Dickie Betts play guitar every day for 50 or 60 days. And I would sit out in the atrium with my acoustic guitar, and Warren Haynes would come out there, open the sliding glass door, he'd smoke a big fat joint, and he'd just look over at me and kind of nod, like, man, that sounds pretty good, man. And it was just cool to, I finally felt kind of like accepted into my family, you know. And I can remember sitting there, and I can remember the last few days of recording, just having this kind of melancholy set over me, and me thinking, man, you know, I'm not going to be able to come hang out at Arden Studios anymore. And I made a promise to myself, and I said, man, someday, you know, you got to make a record here. And I ended up making several there, and it was like coming full circle, and it was really pleasing to walk in those doors and go, yeah, man, I'm not a hanger on. I'm coming in here to make a record, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So it's always been really special. I mean, Zeppelin 3, you know, parts of it were done there. Some amazing kick-ass records. What's that?
There's definitely some history in that place.
Yeah, man. So it's like to be a small sliver part of that is like, what? Okay.
That's amazing. So let's see. So as far as you're getting started in music in general, you've cited influences, you know, including like the Rolling Stones and Santana and Hendrix, you know, some kind of bump into the classic rock genre. And I was just wondering if you have any, you know, influences, you know, if you're feeling any influences from some of the more, you know, current modern rock, like, you know, bands that are more or less your peers. I know you expressed your liking of Lucero, but, you know, what else are you currently, you know, are you feeling influenced from any of your peers out there?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, when you start hitting on words like influence or inspiration, you know, it's a couple different things. I mean, B.B. King influences my style, you know, and Curtis Mayfield and Keith Richards. And, you know, but as far as like being inspired, I mean, there's a lot of new music out there that inspires me. And, you know, I may not take like a direct influence, but the inspiration is there. I love Lucero. They're one of my very favorite bands. I love The Shins. Yeah. I love Thievery Corporation. I like a lot of ambient stuff. I probably have a lot of stuff on my iPod that people would go, really?
Right.
Like you? You know? But that's healthy. You know, I think listening to a lot of different kinds of music is important. You know, I just bought some vinyl of some 1975 funk from Thailand. You know, it's this Thai funk record.
Yeah.
I can't wait to spend. You know, I think it's important to kind of like listen to everything.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you learn something or pick up something or, you know, from anything, you know, whether, you know, you're listening to some country music or an opera or, you know, something of that sort.
Totally.
Yeah,
I'm a Zappa head.
Oh, nice. You preaching
the choir. There you go. You know, it's like, you know, as long as you're there, you're probably everywhere.
Oh, yeah. So, hey, could you take a second and think? I just was wondering if you could give me the name of an artist or a band that you're excited about that is kind of yet to break into the public ear. I'm always trolling for new music and,
I've
been watching these guys at this, bar, this place, and these guys are great. Nobody knows about these guys. That'd be wonderful.
Totally. There's two artists right now that I'm really, really excited about. And I may be working with them, in a professional capacity. I'm definitely producing one and I'm going to play on the other one's record. And then there may be some potential. I'm in the process of creating my own record label. So there could be some exciting prospects for these artists, but they're both very young and very talented. One is Erica Blinn. She's a singer-songwriter out of Columbus, Ohio. She's very salt of the earth. What's that?
Blinn was the last name?
Yeah, B-L-I-N-N. She's hot shit, man. Very salt of the earth. She plays harmonica, singer, songwriter, great stuff. She's gonna definitely be something. Then the other band is Delta Soul Revival, and soul like sun, like S-O-L.
Okay.
Delta Soul Revival is led by, this 19-year-old guitar virtuoso. They're from Springfield, Missouri. And they're totally badass jam band with Latin slant and a jazz slant.
Oh, nice. I'll have to check them out when we get off the horn. Thank you.
They're both young artists, so they're definitely developing, but what they're developing is something very real and very rich.
Very nice. There's a lot of cookie cutter crap out there these days. It's nice to get a recommendation from someone such as yourself.
Yeah, man. I think you'll dig them both.
Yeah, I'll definitely check them out. So Devin, just to touch on this slightly, despite the fact that you're the son of Greg Allman, you've really always done your own thing musically, and why you seem to be, kind of genetically predisposed in terms of, musical talent. You definitely have, you can hear some of the same attributes as your father. You've developed your own style, and a lot of kids of people, rock and roll legends, have a hard time finding their own voice and existing, outside of, that kind of shadow, so to speak, of their parent. Seems kind of like a blessing and a curse in a way. And I was, just wondering, one, what's your secret? And, two, I was wondering if you feel in a strange way. I mean, how old were you when you met your father?
I was 16.
Okay.
And,
so
that was the first time ever. So that was strange.
And so had you been playing music prior to that?
Yeah, I mean, I fell in love with music. I fell in love with music at age 5, and I mean, luckily I had a killer radio station in Corpus Christi, Texas. And the funniest shit about it is we'd be driving down the road and I'd say, "Hey mom, who's that?" And she'd go, "Fleetwood Mac." "Oh, hey mom, who's that?" "Oh, that's Paul McCartney and Wings." "Oh, hey mom, who's that?" "Well, that's your dad."
True.
And it was like, what? What are you talking about? So I grew up knowing it.
Yeah.
And most people can't because it's a trip, But
yeah.
But I was like, hey, whatever, that's cool. I mean, it didn't really kind of, sink into later, but, I was jamming in garage bands. I fell in love with music before I knew who my father was. I had bands. Multiple bands before I met my father. So I knew I was doing this. This was not like, oh, dad does this. It's cool. Let me try. It was, dude, this is in my being. Like, I love this. This makes me feel complete. So, it's really funny when you get the misconceptions out there of like, oh, he grew up on a tour bus and backstage, of course he plays. It's like, dude, whatever. you don't even know, bro. Like,
yeah.
So, I, you know, I mean, when you say, when you ask, like, what's the secret is this. You know, I love to play music, and I'm a really hard worker. You know, I've been in a van touring 200 to 300 nights a year for a decade. Like anybody else that got out there, like Joe Smith, you know, and that's my secret. I didn't expect any special treatment. I played for $200 in tacos for the first 2 years. And, you know, I wanted to work it. I wanted to turn around and go, I made this. Not my dad, not my family, not anyone else. And I started small, and then it started to grow and grow and grow. And now you look back and it's like, wow, man, this is cool. This is actually going somewhere.
Right.
Like sometimes I stop and just trip out, and I still see the kid, you know, from Corpus Christi, Texas, going, "Hey, mom, who's that?" Because that's still just me.
Yeah.
You know, so you know, when you go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna, you know, like you said, you know, people have the misconception of you maybe, you know, growing up on a tour bus. Do you feel like by not growing up on a tour bus, so to speak, that it was easier to develop your own style to whereas maybe if you had grown up that way, right? Right.
So much. Like the thing about growing up away from that circus is that I got to develop my own passion for music that wasn't tainted. And I got to develop my own work ethic of like, I'm going to do my own shit, you know, period. Like, I don't know if those things would have been as pure growing up in that circus. You know, so when people are like, dude, you know, how do you handle this and how do you do it? And, you know, you kind of carry on the legacy, but you totally have your own thing. And it's like, it wasn't really by design, man. Like, I just worked really, really, really hard. That's it. Yeah. You know, and I never did drugs, you know.
Good for you. Nice.
Because that's one thing, you know, that their circus and that lifestyle from the 60s and the 70s, it freaked me out enough to be like, dude, I'll never do that, ever. Like, screw that. So I think that could be a contributing factor too, bro.
Right.
But it is really crazy to think about, because I can remember, you know, being that 5, 6, 7-year-old holding those vinyl records going, these guys are gods. Like, I would never be able to do this. These people are gods. And starting my career, even at age like 27, going, I'll never play theaters or go to Europe. And, you know, I mean, this year, dude, it's crazy. We've got a Royal Southern Brotherhood live record and DVD. I've got my first solo record. We go to Australia next month. I just got appointed to the board of directors for the National Blues Museum. You know, and I'm like looking at all this stuff going, what? This is amazing, you know? Truly, like, I'm tripping out.
Yeah. So you'd been playing in bands and you know, you gradually, you know, got in contact with your father and you know, one of us began a relationship.
Right.
How did he, you know, with you pursuing music, did he have a, you know, any positive or negative, you know, feedback on you having a music career, you know, based on, you know, what he obviously, you know, what transpired over his life?
Oh, I think his first reaction was like, man, you don't want to do this. Like, what are you, crazy? This is the shittiest business around. But, I mean, he knew my passion because he has the same, you know. We love, you know, at the very core common denominator of me and my father, I would say the one thing that is absolutely equivalent is we both really, really love to open our mouths and sing.
Yeah.
You know, we love to play music and sing. So, you know, you deal with all the bullshit to get to the real stuff.
Right.
You know, the crappy business deals, the 6-hour layovers in airports, the, you know, the rides in the vans, all the blah, 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 blah. I mean, that's what you're getting paid for. The stage time is free.
endurance. So, and Devin, you have a boy who's probably around maybe 11, 12 years old now?
Yes, he's a 12-year-old.
Yowzer. I got a 14er here.
It's the best job on the planet.
Oh, it's the best, man. It's the best thing you can do with your life. I mean, you can just attain so many things.
Best job on the planet.
It takes the cake. Does he show any inclination toward music? Does he, you know, does he play any instruments or, you know, kind of showing?
I mean, he's very much a normal 12-year-old. He plays basketball. He plays video games. He's very smart. He's got great grades. He's been playing piano for 4 years and guitar for a couple. And, you know, it's a dabbling right now. It's not an obsession. I don't know if the bug will bite him. The abilities are all there. It's nice to see that it truly does, you know, go down the generations. It's present and accounted for. If you want to use it, it's there.
Yeah. Right on.
And I'll probably turn to him and go, man, you don't want to do this.
You don't want to do that. Be a doctor.
Oh, yeah.
So, Devin, in addition to the fine catalog of music that you've amassed and continue to, you're dabbling in some culinary endeavors as well. Namely,
yes.
You have a brand of hot sauce out, and I've also noticed looking at your past and present tour schedule, you guys are doing some dinner shows. Can you elaborate on those sort of things?
Sure. Cooking's a definite passion. You know, that's actually when I'm whining about wanting to go home for a while, I just really want to cook. In all seriousness, it's just, I love to cook. It's a passion, and it was really cool to put my name on a hot sauce last year, and it's been marketed real well, and, you know, it's gaining new fans every day. So that's just something that I always wanted to kind of do. I remember seeing Sammy Hagar kind of, you know, step into the world of, you know,
Cabo Tequila.
You know, yeah, with the tequila. That guy made
a
lot of money on that tequila.
Right.
And so I want to make, you know, I want to make people happy with hot sauce. And the dinner show is just a really great idea, you know, because it kind of incorporates my love of cooking with the music. So when you come to the dinner show, you're getting a show from me, but you're also getting, before the show, a meal where every single thing on the menu is my recipe.
That's what I read. That's amazing.
It brings me closer to my fans. You know, I get to go on stage, and I get to almost be in stand-up mode and talk about food. And how awesome. Like, that's awesome. So it was something that was really just an experiment to see how it would go over. We did it in Chicago last week. And it was super successful. So we're going to start doing it in other markets. And I can't wait. It's cool, you know, and I get to kind of get the hot sauce to be, you know, a sponsor, and it's kind of win-win, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm kind of wishing that that Denver show you guys are playing in a couple weeks is one of those. I can imagine you probably have some pretty incredible Southern recipes amassed, and I guess I'm sad.
I'm getting there, you know? I'm never home enough to freaking really, really stretch out and go nuts, but I'm getting there.
Right. So back to the tour. Looks like you have a slew of shows this year with the Brotherhood, and you're starting about next week with 5 dates in Colorado. I was wondering, in addition to the Brotherhood shows, how it's looking as far as you touring with the solo band in support of Turquoise.
Well, you know, the whole thing when everybody came into Royal Southern Brotherhood was that, you know, it was going to be the priority. And when we had time away from it, we would do solo touring. So, you know, they kind of blueprinted out the rest of the year. And, so I do have some holes in my schedule to tour with the solo band. I'm going to do 3 weeks in March, mostly East Coast. And, that should be a good time. And then I think we go back out in June and back out in September.
Okay.
DevinAllmanBand.com is going to have the all-new online store where you can get all the merch and the hot sauce and all that stuff, and then also our tour dates for the solo band.
And we'll take a look at those and hope you can get back out to Colorado for...
Oh, I'm sure we will. It's just a matter of time.
In the future. Right. You know, to cap off, just wondering, you know, Honey Tribe, it's looking like it's kind of on a temporary hiatus while you're doing the Brotherhood stuff and the solo album stuff, and wondering, can we expect more from this outfit in the future?
Well, you know, it's a band that I ran for a long time, and I think that it's still relevant, you know, but I definitely need to go down this path of the solo stuff and the Royal stuff, you know, and kind of get through that path a bit to kind of come back to Honey Tribe and say, well, you know, do we have another record in us? I started already writing, you know, a third Honey Tribe record, and the record is called Elephants. And it's a very riff-based, very ZZ Top, Led Zeppelin, like heavy Les Paul guitar riffy record. It's really cool. And I would like a chance to make that, you know, so maybe, I don't know, you know, maybe 2015, you know, maybe in a couple of years, we get on back to it. It'd be fun.
Right on. There's plenty to do in the meantime. And yeah, keep.
Oh, God, yeah. My schedule's full.
Yeah, no, I just based upon the research I was able to pick up, it's full to say the least. Well, great. Devin, thanks so much for taking the time out to you know, speak with us. The readers are going to be really excited to hear this. And
thank you for the coverage, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's absolutely my pleasure. I'm scheduled to be down at the Denver show and,
dude, say hello, man, for sure. I'll buy you a beer.
Absolutely. I was going to say, I forgot your publicist or manager's name, but I'll get in touch with her and maybe we can do, you know, a short chat before the show or something like that if time
allows. Hey, love to, dude. Absolutely. Hit her up.
Awesome. Thank you so much, man. And the best to you. Thanks for all the music, and we'll look forward to more to come, and seeing you out on the road this summer.
Dude, thanks for everything. I'll catch up with you in Denver.
All right. Take care, Devin. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Cheers.